Welcome to Truth Talks. Well, today I'm going to give you an update on the Million Person March in Canada. So we are almost 1 week post-March, and it has been a fabulous event. It really stirred up a lot of activism, counter-protests by labor unions and teachers unions. But you know, what happened was that parents showed up, and children showed up with their parents. So we had about 10 to 12,000 parents in Ottawa that came out, and across the country, across Canada, we had over 100 marches in cities and towns. And you know, in a little hamlet, well, a little town of about 8,000 close by where I lived, there were 240 that came out. So we had like little cells in each town that were showing up to speak out against the indoctrination, the sexualization of children in our public school system. So this is just the beginning. We are going to continue moving forward as a group of concerned individuals across Canada. We are in the process of doing some strategies, and we have some plans to move forward in how we are going to address this situation in our public education and how we are going to protect our children. So that's kind of a little bit of summary. It was a fabulous time. There were a couple of arrests of counter protests, not maybe one in Ottawa, and then there were a couple others across the country, but this was a peaceful protest, and it was peaceful on our side. The other side, the counter protesters actually were quite vile in their language, in their behavior toward us, in this whole area of suggesting, not suggesting, but condemning us for hatred. And that's been part of an ongoing strategy, I would say, by LGBTQ activists. And I'm going to speak to that a little bit today. I want to share some excerpts from a book called After the Ball. And this was written in 1989 by, and I'll show you that, I'll just show you this, Marshall Cook and Hunter Madden. Now, this book is quite large, as you can see. And so I'm not going to share directly from that book, but in my own book written in 2016, Closing the Floodgates, what I've done is I have a synopsis. And I'm going to read you a little bit today about the strategies, because I think it's important that we understand that this isn't something that's just happened upon us as a culture. This has been strategically planned for decades. And one of the things that we want to do is to expose some of that. Let me go back to this book, After the Ball, first of all. The title is After the Ball, but the subtitle is How America Will Conquer Its Fear and Hatred of Gays in the 1990s. So fear and hatred of gays. And when we look at that, isn't that exactly what we're hearing constantly, that we hate homosexuals, lesbians, bisexual people, that the rest of the population hate this group? And I want to suggest to you that that is not true. And really, while there's always outliers, I'm not saying that there haven't been individuals who have been nasty in the past, and I think that that's wrong. But I also would say to you that in 2023, hatred of homosexuality and homosexuals is just not there. We're not in that place, and we haven't been for several decades, actually. And I have friends within the community, LGBTQ community, and I don't hate these people. In fact, I really like some of them. And it's not about hatred. It's about morality. And it is about the deeper issue of indoctrinating children into an activist kind of perception that would expose them to things, sexual things that are way out of not just the ordinary, but out of their need to know as children. In fact, many of these behaviors, I would suggest they don't need to know at all until they're adults. And lots of adults don't want to know and don't care. So there you go. So we do not want this exposed to our children in the education system. So that's about the march. But let me read some of the words and the strategies of the LGBTQ from the 80s and early 90s. This is particularly from the 1980s, because I think it's really important that you understand some of the background. So number one, they call us haters, homophobes, and bigots, all of those names, because we as individuals, and particularly as Christians and Muslims, do not adhere to a sexuality that is different than one male and one female. We want to keep our children with our views and values, and we want to teach them our views and values. But let me read this. This is from the overhauling of Straight America. The first order of business is the desensitization of the public concerning gays and gay rights. So this was in the 1980s, 1989, after The Ball was written. So this was the first issue of business, desensitizing the public and persuading the masses that homosexuality is a good thing. And that's basically what has been done over the last few decades. So let me also just continue with the second point from the LGBT activists. And that is to talk about gay and gayness as loud as possible. Almost any behavior then begins to look normal if you are exposed to it enough and at close quarters and among your acquaintances. And isn't that true? Oh, since the 1980s into the 90s and, of course, following, the exposure to gays and gayness has been unrelenting. And the more we're exposed to anything, the more it becomes normalized in our minds, in our thoughts, and we just begin to accept these things, that this is the way it is, and that this is all normal behavior. The way to be numb, this is their words, be numb raw sensitivities, because there is a there in the past has been a sensitivity morally in the behavior, not about the people, but about the behavior. Like, I have some sensitivities toward the drug culture. And one of the reasons is because I have a son who was highly addicted to drugs for many years. Do I hate my son? Of course not. But I hate what drugs have done to him. And we have to start separating the behavior from the person once again. We can love people, but we don't have to agree with them. And that's what this march in Canada was really about. We can love them. We aren't saying that you can't practice whatever kind of behavior in Canada you want to practice, because nothing is illegal. And so sexually, as an adult, you're free to do what you want unless you're harming other people. But what we are saying, you're not free to teach our kids, to teach our children, that this is the behavior that's acceptable across the board for them, and that they should learn everything that possible about homosexuality, about bisexuality, about all kinds of polygamy and everything else that goes with it, and to think that this is their moral guideline, because it's not. It's not what the parents want to teach their children. So to be numb raw sensitivities about homosexuality is to have a lot of people talk a great deal about the subject in a neutral or supportive way. And one of the strategies that has worked so well for the LGBTQ ally or activists is that they have created allies. Well, the population itself is very small. Now it's growing. I will say that it has grown in the last decade, especially among transgender individuals. And that is a political term. It really isn't a medical term. But let me go back to gender dysphoric individuals. And I'll talk about that another day. But within the LGBTQ, there has been growth. And right now in Gen Z, I think it's over 30% of young people are now identifying as something other than heterosexual. And you know, why did that happen? Well, because it's been talked about incessantly for decades. It has been normalized in our society. And it has been, it's been supported by what we would call allies that have come alongside. And one of the reasons, and I'm going to skip ahead to point three. I'm coming back to point two in a minute. But one of the reasons that it's been so successful is their point three. Gays must be cast as victims in need of protection. And that is exactly what's been done. So homosexuals, and I'm not saying that they were never targeted. So hear me out here. There have always been people that target other people across our cultures for one reason or another, whether it's because of their ethnicity or their sexuality. But here is their strategy. This is a strategy by LGBTQ activists that gays must be cast, so portrayed as victims across the board, whether they are victimized or not. That's like saying, you know, I don't know how to describe this in a way that isn't doesn't sound condescending in some way, but I'm just thinking it's just like saying that every child has been abused, and we cast them as being abused, every child. And so we're doing this kind of activism with homosexuals and saying they're all victims. Every one of them has been victimized. So what's wrong with that? Well, I would say that the problem with that is it's untrue. And when you look at the whole of population, when you think of victimization, here's the other flip side. If you want to say all homosexuals have been victimized, then you have to look at the rest of the population and say, well, perhaps everyone's been victimized at some point in time in their life. And I think that's where we come to, because realistically, I've been victimized. I expect you've been victimized. So we need to really look at this and really take it apart a little bit and say, okay, what's happening currently in our culture? Because in our culture in 2023, homosexuality is not, it's looked at as a normal to practice. People have accepted it. It started with tolerating it as a behavior and then choosing to accept it. Now, I'm not talking about the people. I'm talking about the behavior. We want to separate that. And then celebrating it. So we have to, as Dr. Lisa Diamond says, we have to stop using the idea that this is all because they're born that way, because research does not support that, even though it has been so pounded into our heads for five decades. There is no research that supports born that way. And the American Psychological Society Association actually does talk about several different things that predispose one toward homosexuality or lesbianism. And a lot of it has to do with abuse. So casting every gay and homosexual in need of protection has really, really brought us to this place where now, if we as a society, as a culture, as parents, dare to suggest that we don't want a radical sexualization of our children in the education system in our public schools, then we are the haters. We're the ones who are hating other people and hating children who may be genders incongruent, sexually confused. And that's not true. That is just not true. We love the children and we want the best for all children. Let me go back to point two. So I've talked about talking about gay and gayness incessantly, right? Loudly, often as possible, because then it begins to look more normal. And then the point two was, so far, gay Hollywood has provided our best covert weapon to desensitize mainstream. And this is really true. There is a proliferation of homosexuality within gay Hollywood, within Hollywood overall. And there's also a high percentage of pedophilia practiced in the higher echelons. And this is having a tremendously devastating effect on people. And I think of, you know, porn stars and all of the pornography that has become so prolific and has now such a place in people's minds, especially for young men. And it is devastating their lives. It desensitizes them to normalcy, to normal sexual expression. And it desensitizes them, and I would say by and large, toward the emotion of women and toward respecting women, to honor women. And so there is this huge, huge push within Hollywood to the extreme, to the absolute extreme. And so we've seen that, and we've seen it grow over the decades. So the covert weapon, and what they say here is we can muddy the moral waters, publicizing support for gays by more moderate churches, raising theological objections of their own conservative interpretations of the Bible. And one of the things that we found out just before the march happened was that the United Church of Canada was calling all progressive-minded churches and like-minded churches to actually rally to counter-protest against parents. And, I mean, this is, to me, where the rubber really hits the road, because the church, and I'll say this, generally, by and large, the Church of Canada, within Canada and the U.S. and across Eastern Europe and all of Europe, actually, has dropped the ball in this regard. And the fact is that because we've been vilified, and that was part of the strategy from the 1980s with LGBTQ activists, was to vilify the church and Christians as haters, homophobes, because we saw a different way of being. And we believed that individuals could actually come into a new place of understanding of their own sexual being. And so the church, and I'm not talking about the progressive church, but the church that has remained faithful to biblical instruction and biblical sexuality, has not in the last decade been standing strong in these areas. While they may still adhere to biblical sexuality, they do not speak out about it. And by and large, they were not represented by within the march across Canada. Now I'll say by and large, because I want to say that there was one denomination or affiliation of churches across Canada that unilaterally went to march. One church I know of, almost 100% of their adherents or members showed up to march as parents against this radical education system and the sexualization of our children. So I'm not negating these wonderful things that are happening. And, you know, courage does inspire more courage. So my hope is that the church in Canada that adheres to biblical sexuality will begin to speak louder and to speak truth and to speak love, because it is loving and kind to tell the truth. And there's a lot of things behind the scenes within the homosexual and LGBTQ populations that it's really difficult for them. And it is, it's medically, psychologically, there are so many conditions and health concerns within this population that the medical profession has kept hidden by and large, and that they need help. And so we want to love all people, but we want to love them by telling them the truth, because that is really what love is. So anyways, let me go on. So muddying the moral waters, and then we can undermine the moral authority of homophobic churches. See the name calling, you know, just because you disagree with someone's behavior, all of a sudden, you know, you get called names, and we've heard this for decades. We can undermine the moral authority of homophobic churches by portraying them as antiquated backwaters, badly out of step with the times and with the latest findings of psychology. Oh my goodness, it's like reading a playbook, because that's exactly what's happened. Now, unfortunately, when they say the latest findings of psychology, there is a whole structure of psychological research that has been activated and infiltrated by LGBTQ individuals and researchers and psychologists who actively promote and who are very biased, not only in their methodology, but their discussion and findings. And so you have to read research and go through it with a fine-tooth comb, because what mainstream research is, what mainstream media promotes as research, as good research, is highly questionable. And we've seen that over the years as well. Okay, so let me keep going. So point four, to make gays look good, you have to portray them as every man. The campaign should paint gays as a pillar of society. And we know this trick is so old it creaks. So this is kind of like, all right, if you are the pillar of society, you don't have to act it. You just have to be. It comes out in your character. But this is a strategy, in a sense, to pretend that they are the pillars of society. And it's worked. And it's worked in the U.S. really well. You have some very high-ranking politicians who are LGBTQ. Some of them should rightfully be there. They are actually looking for the best interests of our country, but many of them are not. There are transgender individuals that are really pushing an activist agenda. So number five is, long after the gay ads have become commonplace, it will be time to get in touch with our opponents. So this is really where the activism rubber hits the road. To be blunt, they must be vilified. Well, we saw that over and over and over again in Ottawa and across Canada with the marches and the shouting that was coming from the counter protesters and the name calling and all of that stuff. And, you know, I have to say, there, I never heard one peep of that from our side, not once. Now, I'm not saying that didn't happen, that somebody didn't say something nasty somewhere across Canada, but I never heard any of that. in Ottawa, it was the counter protesters, and they're vile. There was a lot of vileness. It was, it's hurtful when I think of the children that were there having to listen to that. So we must be vilified. That's what they're saying. First, we must need to replace the mainstream self-righteous pride about its homophobia with shame and guilt. It's lots of words in there, but here we are. If you're heterosexual now, it's almost shameful. Do you hear that? Like, it's like you have to go into hiding. If you're a masculine male in 2023, and I've got four adult boys, they're men. In fact, my eldest is 48. My youngest is 31. Men, let me tell you, they are masculine males. And not only that, they're white, because obviously, and they're vilified. In fact, it's hard for white men to even get employment in some places because of the whole inclusivity. Anyways, that's another issue. The reality is that if we are not adhering to all of these activist demands, that we actually are the ones who are being vilified. It's about our protection now, not so much what's happening within the LGBTQ, because they really have been, by and large, received quite well. And their activism has worked. And so when I say that, I think that all people should be treated equally. I don't have a problem with that. But I do believe that we make judgments based on the character of a person, and that if we make moral judgments based on their moral behavior. You know, if my neighbor is cheating on his wife, I make a judgment on that. I mean, first of all, I think it's very sad. And it will probably end up, you know, in a divorce down the road. And are we okay with that? Can we say, well, that's not a good thing? This is not healthy. It's not healthy. It's not healthy for the person that's caught up in the adultery. It's not healthy for the family. And we need to be able to talk about these things. So let me go back to this. Where was I? Yes, shame and guilt. So yes, so heterosexual individuals now are looked on almost with disdain. And that's what's happening within our schools. That's why so many young people are actually deciding and coming out as bisexual. It's a safer place to be, because at least they can have a label and not be vilified. It's interesting, isn't it? We've come to an interesting place in society. So the other issue, number six, was to solicit funds, which they have done. And then number seven, their point seven, I'm just reading short excerpts. The National Gay Task Force has had to cultivate quiet backroom liaisons. We must continue to encourage the appearance of favorable gay characters in film and TV. And if we behave ourselves courageously and respectfully, our drive would gain legitimacy. Let me read that again. Sorry. If we behave ourselves courageously and respectfully, our drive would gain legitimacy. So all of these things putting together is a well-planned strategy, very well-planned. I want to go back to something that was partly included in their third point, and I kind of skipped over this, but I want to come back to it because it pertains to one of the reasons many parents are becoming very, very concerned for their children. And the exposure to sexual practices and the desensitization of their children to sexual experiences of all forms is very concerning. And that this is why one of the things the LGBTQ activists say in this platform is that it goes without saying that groups on the farthest margin of acceptability, such as Nambula. Now, Nambula, I'll explain this in a minute. Nambula has been kind of dissolved, but that doesn't mean there aren't other groups that are still operating. Nambula was the North American Man-Boy Love Association. The North American Man-Boy Love Association. It was called Nambula. And it must play no part at all in the campaign. Suspected child molesters will never look like victims. Now, it's interesting because Marshall Kirk does not deny Nambula's presence within the LGBTQ community. He doesn't say they shouldn't, we need to really, really make sure there are none of them among us. We want to protect children. No, what he says is that it goes without saying that groups on the farthest margin of acceptability. So he's talking about these are the groups, these are the individuals, these are the pedophiles, because man-boy love is about pedophilia. So these groups that are amongst us, but are kind of on the furthest, furthest side, because regular, and I'll call them regular LGBT individuals, are not pedophiles. The average, I don't know what you want to call them, your neighbor next door, it's probably not a pedophile if they're gay or homosexual. But there is a large population within the LGBTQ group community that practice man-boy love. And that's pedophilia. So they wanted to keep that group kind of hidden, put it away, but they did not deny their presence within the community. And they didn't decry their presence either. And that is very telling. Okay, so I'm almost finished here for today. This is kind of a little bit of overload, I'm sure. So where am I at? Number 8. So viewers should be treated to squeak clean skits. So it's talking about media again, television particularly. As squeak clean skits on the importance of family harmony and understanding. And then with ads, this message is brought to you by the National Gay Task Force so that the core of their program is a media campaign to change the way the average citizen views homosexuality. So you can have a squeaky clean skit on family harmony and then have a byline brought to you by the National Gay Task Force. And so subliminally, people are thinking, oh, okay. And as you've seen, there are lots of commercials. There's lots of sitcoms that include homosexual couples within the mainstream TV, television, and of course in movies. So that's just a little bit of an update on, from decades ago, the strategies that the LGBTQ community actually used to get from a place of being separated from society, because they largely were, and they had to stay hidden, to the place now where they are not only accepted but embraced, and not just as individuals, but their behavior is declared normative and moral. And that's what parents are saying, well, I don't agree with that. And that goes against my views and values. Do we have a place for that conversation in Canada? Thank you for listening today.
You've been listening to Truth Talks with Dr. Rann. Thank you so much for joining us today. You can find Anne's books, blog, and sign up for the newsletter by going to restoringthemosaic.ca.